Looking to the future, what worries you the most?
Two kids and a pregnant wife.
You know, I won't give you the glass half full speech because I think over the long haul, Colorado's in a great position to be a, you know, a new 21st century city and a new technology city. But the thing that I'm talking to my board about all the time, and I want them to be aware of, is making sure that we haven't lost our competitive advantage. Not only to make sure we retain J.D. Edwards and you know, the Peter Coors of the world, ADF Coors Company, but that we can attract new investment, the Level 3s, the Sun Microsystems, the First Data Corporations. One of the things that concerns me is that when I question whether we've lost our competitive advantage is in areas of, for example, housing costs. We're no bargain anymore. I'm selling this place all the time, and there's not a competitive advantage. And when I came back to Colorado and started doing this in 94, we ranked below the national average in housing costs. So I could go out to the Silicon Valley, to Austin, and say, you know what, you need to put your business here. You need to expand your business here because we're a good place to do business. We've lost that. Congestion, traffic congestion. We've got to fix our transportation issues. I guess in the long and the short of it is Colorado's economy has been built on you, on people. We've had in-migration steady since the end of World War II. You know, when I've met with Ed McVaney and others, they said, you know, to me, Joe, the key to Colorado, and I remember Rick meeting with you early on, the key to Colorado is our workforce. And the key is making sure that this is a good place to raise kids, that it's that people want to continue to move in here. Because that's what will grow our tech community over the next 20 years, is attracting and retaining the best skilled talent we have. And so what I'm worried about is that we've dropped a few notches in the last four or five years, that we can continue to attract this right type of labor. You know, I look at this, I feel like we're a little complacent. I feel like we're the Denver Broncos coming off two Super Bowl wins. You know, it's hard to get jacked up for it. So I think we've got to, without solutions, Rob, we've got to really take a hard look at ourselves and figure it out whether we have, you know, our nose is crooked and we have warts. Because we're not the same Denver or the Front Range as we were in 94.
It's a tough one, really. What worries you most every day, I guess, there's a couple of thoughts that come to mind, but the first things I would say is worries me is actually the communications industry in general worries me probably the most, because I think this region is affected greatly by that, and secondly, it affects my investment in innovation when communications don't get deployed everywhere, so that the always-on internet can't be everywhere it needs to be to help people share ideas. And so, since that's my premise and I'm sticking to it, and I believe that the internet matters and will continue to, because it's a tool that allows all of us to do more with less and better and more exciting. I want the mechanisms and the technologies and businesses to flourish, and we're in one of the best places in the world for that to occur. And so I worry about actually the government activities and the restrictions on communication businesses to be able to provide competitive environments to allow this infrastructure to go out there and actually people get paid when they make those risks. And I don't have the answers, you know, because you've already heard I didn't do real well in economics, but I know that there are tough issues and I know there's a lot of legacy to that, but I think that what worries me is we don't seem to be making enough progress quick enough in that area, because the wireline and the wireless industries, as well as the satellite industries, which we're very proud to have what could be the leading satellite provider, which I think will be critical to this region. It just continues to bode well for us. That worries me, and I'd love our state and myself and anyone else out in the crowd that will help make that happen. The other thing that worries me is that somehow we don't invest enough in our healthcare system. I plan to live a long, healthy life, but I won't if we don't put more investment in solving a lot of those problems. Obviously, as an investor in that area, it's important to me, but I'd like to see that the state, as well as government agencies around the world, puts more money into our healthcare system, as well as the science associated with solving some of the critical problems. So.
My job description includes worrying about a lot of things. And so I've got a long list of things I worry about. But as Joe mentioned, you know, as our technology industry here in the state is built on people, it's the people that I worry about. I worry about that slice of the employee base out there that is looking to return to late 99, that is looking to return to an era of these triple-digit returns that are just not in touch with reality, and worrying that people are trying to recapture that level of frenzy. The frenzy isn't what gets sustained growth. I worry about people making applications that are more worried about the foosball table than the work they're going to do, and we see enough of that. So I'm concerned that the realistic expectations are not really there yet. And I'm concerned that we are so desperate for signs of upticks that we latch onto any particular metric and finally say that, ah, the recession is finally over. I'm worried that there again, that the expectations are not in line with reality. We have a long way to go, I believe. I believe that this is going to be another rough year, that things will be flat at best. And what I worry about on the people side of that is that we don't collectively have the guts to see it through, that some people take flight away from here. And that would be the real loss to our industry at large if people don't see the upside coming. I think anyone that thought that the bubble could go on forever are just as benighted, just as ignorant as those people who feel that the downturn can go on forever. We live in a cyclical world, and being able to ride out these cycles is what creates success. This is the third recession that J.D. Edwards has seen in 25 years, and we know we're probably not done with this either. We'll see another one, maybe another 7 years. The key is preparing now for that turnaround, not worrying about when it happens, but be prepared for it when it does. All the metrics that we use are backwards facing, right? Anything we measure has to measure what happened, and we have no way to determine when that turnaround is going to happen. So make sure that the metrics you use are diversified, that you're using more than one measurement to determine where we are in terms of economic health, and understand that, you know, it is darkest before the dawn, and frankly, it's pretty dark right now. So that's what I worry about.
Why don't we take a couple quick questions from the audience before we break up? Yes, sir. Why don't you pick out one of those, Rick?
I really can't comment on the Enron thing. I think, there's always a bad egg in every basket, right? And sometimes they get caught, sometimes they don't. I'm not sure anybody intended for it to happen. I got to tell you that I think some of our accounting laws and the complexity of doing business internationally and the laws associated with how you track it and measure it and work with it are daunting at best. To pin the difficulties on any one person, I think is very difficult. That's not to say that there aren't people that did things that misrepresented things, but that's kind of, you see that every day. And I don't put Enron out as a telltale of things to come or things of past any different than any other time. I think it's called the human beings, and they haven't changed much in that regard, it turns out, at least in my opinion. As far as profitability and venture capitalism and being disappointed, you sound like my wife. But I will say that you have to remember the business that we're in. The business that we're in is not always about revenues and profits. And of course, you look at the P&Ls and you look at the balance sheets. You drive all the traditional metrics. But at the end of the day, our business is about liquidity. And when the analogy I've used 100 times, and it works for me, it might not work for you, is that we are a very early stage in the food chain as it relates to the business growth and business maturation. And frankly, it's much like a diner or a restaurant where we're back there cooking food, and typically you bring the food out, people are willing to pay you $7 for something that cost you $1 to build in the back, whether it was a hamburger or french fries. And you'd have to present it reasonably well, but the person coming in knows that they can take that and do something with it, and they're willing to take your service and so forth. And so that's kind of the business. You know, you cost you a dollar, you sell it for $7. What happened is everybody decided they liked the food, and they all came in and they all wanted it. We couldn't produce it fast enough. So what happened is we started slopping food onto the plates really fast just to hand them to people because they were willing to pay you the $7. But you spent no time making the plate look right, making sure the silverware was in the right place, whether the food was cooked, because they took it, they paid you, and they were still happy. And so that's the financial food chain that we respect in our country, All right? And it's got some really great elements to the way it works. But the fact is that the venture community was asked to produce, and we are, that's our business. It's very unfortunate, but that's kind of how the system got ahead of itself. All right.
You got the first place.
Well, no.
Integrity for our company is a critical issue. We have found in 25 years that in this and just about any other state, we're probably one of the most conservative technology companies out there. And that the way we do business is the reason people do business with us. And we take that very seriously. And, you know, it's easy to dismiss this coming from the corporate spokesperson. We've got over 6,300 customers out there that have been with us an average of 6 years. And the integrity of the relationship that we have with them is a reflection of the integrity of the way we act in the business world. We believe deeply in transparent balance sheets. When J.D. Edwards went public, it wasn't to raise capital, it was to provide visibility into our operations for our customers. The kind of software that we sell, the average price is about $300,000. It takes you about $1 million to install it. When you're engaging in that level of transaction, and you're talking about disrupting a company's operations to put in this kind of software, you better have a relationship that's based on trust and integrity. And it's from that integrity that we have grown. We've seen that growth happen both in our customer base and the way that our businesses is displayed on Wall Street. You know, right now there's going to be a lot of issues with every public company about how they're posting their earnings, whether it's GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles, or pro forma earnings. J.D. Edwards does both. We present our pro forma earnings, and the next sentence in every release is always those GAAP earnings as well, so that reporters and others can take the choice of what they want to report on. That visibility is critical. And we continue to support that visibility by being open about where things are going right and where things are going wrong. So I believe that, you know, it's a way to act as a company in a responsible fashion that provides that visibility. That's going to create integrity and trust. In addition to that, you got to keep stuff on the balance sheet, flat out. If you don't have stuff on the balance sheet, how are people going to understand where you're going as a business? And we believe deeply in that, and it's why we're conservative in that fashion. And the only thing off our balance sheet, for the most part, is the buildings that we built, our campus down in Southeast Denver. The only difference between our GAAP numbers and our pro forma numbers was the acquisition of a company actually funded by Sequel early on, Eucentric, out in Charlotte. I think you were part of the first round, if I'm not mistaken. It's good to hear. I hope that was one that paid off. You know, Rick talks about...
It was really good.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was well presented. Well, and that's the kind of cycle that we look for. We look for... those, when we're in an inquisitive state of mind and we're looking for those smaller companies to broaden out our footprint, we're looking for companies who share that sense of integrity, who have a visibility and transparency of their balance sheets, and give us a way to do due diligence in a fashion that doesn't become so costly. You get caught up in figuring out what's there, it's typically not worth it. So it's a very important issue, and I expect this is not the last we'll see of it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking our panelists this evening. Victor Chiat, Rick Patch, Joe Snell.
And let's also give a hand to Terry Freeman, who pulled all this together. And we're going to have this up on the ICC.org website, or as Terry says, ICC.org, as well as the radio show website, W3W3.com. Thank you.